Good afternoon. Thanks for attending this afternoon. And as the title suggests, I'm going to be looking at multiple sustainable intensification goals in rice systems through irrigation management. My intention here isn't to go into a lot of detail into any one of these specific goals. I will highlight through the talk where other talks are being given at this meeting where you can go for more specifics if you're interested. Why rice and why are we interested in sustainable intensification in these systems? Well, rice provides more calories for humans than any other crop on earth. It's, however, associated with relatively high water use, often 100%, 200% more than other crops. It has a higher global warming potential than other cereal crops. This is usually related to high methane production and emissions in these systems. And more recently, there's concerns over heavy metals in these systems. Particularly, they're anaerobic systems. You have issues with arsenic and methylmercury becoming more available, the production of methylmercury. Arsenic is a concern, primarily because a lot of rice is used for baby foods. Methylmercury is a concern partially as a health, it gets into the grain, but also a lot of water leaves rice systems and enters surface waterways where methylmercury bioaccumulates in those systems. Looking at sustainable intensification, we can imagine a couple of definitions. A lot have circulated through this talk. On this side here, we can say, well, sustainable intensification is we're able to increase yields while maintaining environmental, social, or health outcomes at a given level. They're not getting worse. On the other side, you could say, well, we're going to increase environmental outcomes while minimizing and not reducing yields. I think both could argue that both of those would fit under the definition of sustainable intensification. However, really, I think what we'd like to see is where we're increasing both. We're getting higher yields or at least higher on-farm profitability for growers that would incentivize growers, while at the same time improving environmental outcomes or social health outcomes. And really what I want to talk today about is, can we use alternate wetting and drying, AWD, can we do this in rice systems and achieve some of these multiple benefits? A lot of you may not be involved in rice. For those of you that are not, usually rice is grown under continuously flooded conditions, where in this case it's flooded from planting until the end of where they drain for harvest. This continuous flood is fairly typical around the world, although the beginning of the season might look a little bit different if you're in Asia or in the southern U.S. Alternate wetting and drying, what that is in introducing some very specific dry down events during the season that fundamentally is going to change the soil from an anaerobic to aerobic state, which alters soil chemistry, will have an effect on gas emissions, heavy metal accumulation, water use, etc. So for this talk, I'm really focusing on some of the work that me and my lab have done in Arkansas. Some of this has been published in California. About 5 years of data. Some of that's been published, not all of it. Some will be new today. And then another student of mine is working on a meta-analysis on this subject. So those are going to be where I'm going to be drawing this data. All right, well, on that one side of that teeter-totter, we wanted to increase yields. This is the yield data. Right away, you can see that we did not increase yields in any of these systems. I'm not going to go through the details of all of these. This is treatments here. Arkansas, California is the gray. Generally, as you're moving from this side of the graph to this side of the graph, we're getting drier conditions. The dry down events are more severe. So that you can see in Arkansas, in one treatment, we were able to maintain yields. However, when you got drier, the yields did decline up to about 13%. In California, where we've also got really quite dry conditions, these are usually 10 to 12 day dry downs where we're drying down for two times. We're not seeing any trend in yield reduction, so we're able to maintain yields despite relatively long periods of drainage. So staying on that side of that balanced teeter-totter thing, we can look at water use. And this is data from Arkansas. And on the left-hand side is data from Arkansas. And if you recall that this treatment here, we didn't see any reduction in yield, but we've got an 18% reduction in water use. We were able to get greater reductions in water use, but that occurred with a slight reduction in yields. Daniela in my lab is working on this meta-analysis. She's also found that under mild AWD, where yields are not reduced, we're able to save about 22-23% water. So looking at across, this is more of a global, but to local as well, without reducing yields, we can save about 20% water. In Arkansas, where this particular study was done, water is very limited, so a lot of growers don't have enough water. So being able to save 20% of water allows them to grow crops on more land. It also reduces their pumping costs because they're pumping from rather deep, usually 200 to 300 meters deep. Pumping costs are very expensive. So this is a good driver for on-farm profitability where water is limited. If we look, jump to the other side now and look at some of the benefits in terms of, in this case, health outcomes by shifting to aerobic system by introducing AWD, we're able to reduce arsenic uptake in the grain and in the straw, but in the grain, importantly, by over 50% in both of these locations. I'm not going to go through all the details. Dr. Sanjay Parikh will be giving a talk tomorrow at 9:30 in the morning, sort of going over some of the dynamics of arsenic uptake and how alternate wetting and drying specifically affects that. Methylmercury is also something that we can reduce. Now again, methylmercury, there's two concerns. One is that it can get taken up in the grain, and that can be harmful. These levels that we're recording here, this is data from California, are well below any health concerns. However, in California, the big issue is with a lot of water running off of rice fields into the delta, there's big concerns about methylmercury in the delta with a lot of fish there and a lot of wildlife. So they're concerned about high levels of methylmercury coming into those systems, and rice is a big contributor to that. I'm not showing the details of what's coming off in the water. Tomorrow, Christy Tanner will be giving a lot more of the details on that if you're interested in that'll be at 10 in the morning. But what this suggests is grain methylmercury is a fairly good indicator of overall methylmercury production during a season. And what this suggests with these lower methylmercury levels in the grain that we see here, about a 40 to 50% reduction, is that overall we're reducing methylation of mercury in these systems, which will be a good outcome. Finally, I want to talk about global warming potential. Not a lot of data up here, but I really want to just focus on this this far side here with these bold numbers. If we're looking at methane and N2O, we're able to reduce total GWP by anywhere from 45 to 90% by, these are usually two draining, dry down events. Most of this reduction comes due to a reduction in methane while at the same time keeping N2O levels low. If you drain a field, it is very likely that you can induce N2O emissions, and I'm going to talk about some of the work that we've done to keep that low. Yield-scaled emissions, which I think are an important sustainable intensification metric in these cases would pretty much be reduced by the same amount that we're seeing the reduction in GWP, because our yields we've maintained at fairly constant levels. Again, for more information, Nimlesh Belend will be talking in more detail about some of the dynamics of these systems tomorrow in the morning at 10:30. So some of the key issues that we've been working with is really keeping that N2O low. And what is really important here is maintaining and managing nitrogen and water together. And in these systems, what we do in a California water-seeded system, I'm not going to go to all the details, but we apply fertilizer up front. This is what growers typically do before planting. We apply the primary amount of fertilizer, about 80% goes on there. And then we hold the water for at least 6 weeks. Sorry, I don't know why that keeps going. We hold the water for 6 weeks, and then we allow the water to subside. What that does is it, by delaying 6 weeks, it ensures that we're taking up all of the fertilizer nitrogen that we've applied. And how do we know that? If we look down here, again, I'm not going to go into all the specifics of these different treatments, but these are plus nitrogen. This is minus nitrogen. This is extractable soil nitrogen here. And you can see when we get to this line here, this is where we drained and we went from anaerobic to aerobic, that all these plus N lines are fertilizer lines. This extractable nitrogen is the same as a zero N. So we've reduced the amount of nitrogen in that system. When we go into these drain events, we have less nitrogen to nitrify and then denitrify, so you're getting better nitrogen use efficiency from a grower. But also N2O losses occur both during nitrification and denitrification, so we're keeping that N2O at a very low amount. The other reason we delay is due to canopy closure, which if you were to drain earlier, you'd probably end up with a lot of weeds. Weeds are a huge problem if you drain early in the season. The other issue that I think we're really looking at is we've talked about water management in conjunction with nitrogen management, but also just the timing and severity of drain events. We've talked a little bit about timing in relationship to nitrogen. However, there's timing in relationship to other factors that may be important. You don't want to maybe go too late if you're draining at certain times. Certain stages of the crop may be a lot more susceptible to some of these drain events. How dry can you go in these systems before you experience a yield loss, or how dry do you need to go in order to get some of these benefits? These are all things that we're looking at right now, but all of these questions are very important when you're thinking about scaling up to commercial farms and fields. And it takes usually 4 days to reflood a field. So what is your window of opportunity there where you need to drain and then get water back onto that field? So this is an area that we're actively researching right now. So in conclusion, I think we do have a win-win situation here where on-farm incomes are increased through reduced water use and pumping. And I will say, this technology, this practice is taking off in parts of Arkansas just because of this. They have carbon credits available to them and other things, but it's really the water savings that is providing the incentive for adoption of this. We're able to maintain yields. We'd like to increase those. We're looking at how we could do that. On this other side of the ledger, we're able to reduce global warming potential by 45 to 90%. We're conserving precious water resources, as the talk last night suggests we need to do. Grain arsenic levels are reduced by about 50%, and we're reducing methylmercury production in these systems. With that, I'd like to thank you.